So Mother's Day this past weekend.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
Did you feel appropriately celebrated?
I was celebrated. I was also abruptly celebrated.
Abruptly? Sounds alarming.
My daughter made a card for me.
Uh-huh.
And her dad was like, you can go in and put it like on the nightstand because I wasn't awake.
Sure, because it's Mother's Day.
It's Mother's Day. I should be able to sleep in. And she was a little salty that I wasn't awake to see her creation. So she walked in and put that card down on my face. Slap.
You wake up. You appreciate this card.
Right.
I'm here to celebrate you right now. Yeah. That's awesome.
Par for the course, really. But
I love it. Well, hey, welcome back to Beyond Sunday. This is Pastor David Bowser. With me, as always, Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Patrick is on some little vacation time, gearing
like
up for
a loser.
Says the woman who was gone for like 4 weeks.
I know. I was on vacation.
Oh, okay.
I was studying.
Right. Whatever.
But I love vacation. Vacation is great.
You weren't on the podcast, so we assume that you just ceased to exist. If you're not here.
That's nice of you. Like real friends do.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not in my eyesight, you don't exist.
Zero object permanence. Yeah, come on.
It's actually a problem. I'm seeing doctors about it.
Wow.
Thanks for bringing up my pain. All right, now.
First of all, I think you're really brave.
Thank you. Yes. I was seeking a compliment.
Yeah.
That. What's that called when you like talk about something that's really hard just to get people to feel bad for you?
Being a jerk.
No, there's like a clinical term for it. I don't think it's clinical.
I probably sorry.
I mean, I don't. Yeah, I think being a jerk is fine because I think we all understand what you're doing. But yeah, there's like a thing that.
Yeah, I don't want to drag like mental health.
Like,
though.
It's like pity seeking or something. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. This is not the important part.
Trauma.
No, it's something. Not trauma. Trauma's serious. No. This is not serious. Right. Trauma's a legit thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're...
I've never heard of it before. I'll just go with that.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but this is why we need Patrick to keep us on track. So
it's going to be fine.
We're going to do great. Hey, I think you've got a news story
I
for
do
us,
have a news story.
And then we're going to spend some time talking about success in a little bit. So we'll get to that. Okay. So what do you got for us?
Something I know nothing about. So...
Not yet.
Yeah.
But it's coming.
We're right on the cusp. All right. How do you feel about HOAs?
I have never actually been formally part of an HOA. So...
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Kind of amazing.
One of the blessed few.
I might have had like an apartment that was technically in an HOA for a while. I don't know. I never like got into it with an HOA, so I've been okay.
Yeah.
I have heard pretty horrific things about them.
Yeah, they actually... So
it could be good, but it can also be like power mongers.
Yeah. So I grew up in the suburbs in a house and neighborhood that had an HOA. Sure. Never really thought anything about it. Just thought
because
you're
a kid and whatever. Yeah.
Goes. Yeah. Turns out after some research, they have a long history of racism and discrimination. So
that tracks.
Not great.
Yeah.
And then also usually they're run by people who don't have anything better to do.
Sure.
But write citations.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a tangent that's not related to our news story.
Okay.
So
this story's not about HOAs though.
Yeah. I just wanted to know what you thought about HOAs. It is about HOAs.
Now we're gonna talk about fast food.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got?
Man ordered to hide his boat has the boat painted on new fence.
Painted on the new fence?
Yeah. So, a California man ordered by his city to conceal the boat parked in his driveway with a fence hired his artist neighbor to paint a photorealistic image of the vessel in an act of rebellious compliance.
So, he built the fence.
He
and then
did.
Painted a picture of the boat on the
and
outside.
Let's see if I can show you this right here.
Oh my God, this is amazing. I really deeply appreciate everything
guy's
doing.
Like, it is.
it's legit. Yeah,
it looks like the boat is just parked there, but it's just his fence.
That's fantastic.
In compliance, it's complete with like his driveway and the horizon and all that. So it looks like nothing has changed. In fact, he's built a fence around his boat.
I love it. That is just the right amount of petty and passive aggressive and spite. Like it's it's not like evil.
It's
just the right amount.
Elegantly done, actually.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's just lovely. I like to think I'm going to pay more money just to stick it to the HOA in this particular way.
We got his neighbor in on it, who is a mural artist who creates art under the name of Hanif Wundir.
The real master in this particular scenario,
Yep. He painted a photorealistic image of the boat and the rest of the driveway on the road-facing side of the fence.
Of course. And what good does it do on the inside?
Right. We kind of hit a sweet spot between following the rules and making an elegant statement to the contrary.
I love
man
it.
Told the Washington Post.
That's the best kind of civil disobedience, when you can follow the rules and point out how stupid the rule is.
Right.
That's great, yeah.
Well, the project earned fans, including sure. Nick Borges, including this podcast, who happens to be the mayor of Seaside, which is where this happened.
Okay.
So he actually called the guy to compliment him on his creative solution. So he said that he had seen the photos on social media because it kind of went viral. And then he realized they were from a local home in the city where he's the mayor.
Okay. I love it.
And he said, I thought, wow, that's pretty creative, and laughed at it. And then I started getting calls from local media and news.
And I was like, oh, these are my people. this is my circus, and these are my monkeys, and now I have
right,
to deal with it. Yeah,
right. Sounds like a pretty cool guy. He said that the man's case was closed out when the fence was installed and no further actions will be taken. The only action I'm going to take is a high five, and that's it.
Good for you, Mr.
Mayor. I know. It's a little feel-good news.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to build like a privacy fence and do that.
Paint trash cans on it?
Yeah, that'll be great.
These are my trash cans.
Take that.
I'm not sure what they can do to you for, you know, mural art on your own fence.
Well, I mean, I guess they would say like you have to, you know, have a blank fence, like, you know, because they could.
Yeah, you should read the rules, though, because they might not have thought
ahead on that. Right, if they didn't think that through, yeah, then you're golden. But
you're good until at least the next HOA election cycle.
Right,
when
somebody's coming after you. Yeah. But then you just got to get elected to the HOA, and then it's all good.
That sounds exhausting.
It does, doesn't it? Like just the thought of being on that.
I already feel oppressed.
No, but you're the oppressor if you're on the board.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
The HOA is the oppressor, the force of the HOA.
The organization. Yes. It's like the patriarchy. We're just fighting against the HOA.
Right. We're all
subject
to the patriarchy and the HOA.
We don't even realize it.
No.
Our HOA privilege. Anyway, all right. So, hey, success.
Success.
What do you know about success?
I'm probably the wrong person to ask.
Well, you famously introduce yourself as pre-successful.
Yeah, I do. I guess for listeners that don't know where that came from,
my
first podcast episode. Yeah, I introduced myself as like a pre-successful writer.
Yeah, and so
which remains
here,
true. Isn't that fun?
Yeah,
isn't that fun?
Still
4 years
here,
later,
still pre-successful. Still pre. So like, when you say still a pre-successful, because here's the thing: you've written things.
I have. Yeah.
You've been published.
Mm-hmm.
You've edited other people's things.
Yes.
You're starting a new side gig where you're kind of more intentionally editing people's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Little shout out to your business there.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to give that.
Find
plug
me on Fiverr. Yeah.
Happy to give you that plug to our tens of listeners.
Sure, though. I will just have a flood of manuscripts after this.
But so, like, what is it about that process that makes you say, "I'm pre-successful" versus? I get it's a joke, but
yeah.
You know, aside from the joking stuff, like what would be successful for you that you have not yet obtained?
Well, I think for most of us, we have a goalpost that defines success, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think in my case, it moves a little bit. Like once I get to that point, then there's another goalpost or, you know, I've moved it farther down the line. For me, that goalpost has been to publish traditionally a novel.
Mm.
Traditionally
meaning like not like self-published and things like that.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, that's an avenue that I might pursue at some point,
sure,
depending on how things go. But I kind of put aside my traditional publishing goals for a few years once I flight school. I'm now kind of picking it back up this summer. So anyway, I'm not just super lazy. I put this aside. A few years, okay.
I want to be clear. Like, I'm not accusing you would be, but I think like there's something intrinsic about how we define success. That success is almost always something that has not yet arrived. Like, I think there are a lot of us who would not yet define ourselves as successful, right? Like, I'm gonna take myself for a moment, right? Like, I remember being in college and thinking, okay, when I get a job, I'll be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a job. I was like, oh, well, I'm an associate pastor. When I become a senior pastor, then I'll be successful. And now I am a lead pastor. And like, I still don't know that I feel success. Like, I know that I'm doing things that matter. I love what I'm doing. I love the congregation that I'm serving. But I don't know, like, if somebody said, well, are you successful? I don't know if I'd say yes to that. I don't know if that's like, is that our generation of saying like there's always that, or is it that cultural element of like the bar is always moving, right? You know, you think, oh, this is going to be it. And then it turns out, oh, nope, I'm waiting for something else. I don't know. And I think that's more what I'm driving at here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's just like you and laziness.
No.
I'm not lazy.
No,
so
I'm not lazy. I'm making a lot of jokes. I'm actually not lazy. But I think it might be a personality thing as well. Like there's something to that as well. Where like take flight school, for example, kind of in the thick of it, it was a thing that felt like it might never happen, almost unobtainable. And then I got my pilot's license and I was like, wow, I really succeeded at that.
Yeah.
And I'm already thinking about getting the next licensing.
I haven't done this yet.
Yeah. It's, I have to have something. I'm very, like, that forward pull of something else is really important to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, when will I ever arrive at a point where I say, yeah, I'm successful?
Yeah. I think that for me is a piece of the question. And I think that, you know, when I talk to people who are at the end of their life, mm-hmm. Right? Because that's a part of the role, is that I spend time with people who are dying or near death. And
mm-hmm. That's fun.
You know, when they're talking about success, or when they're looking back at their life and thinking about the things that, you know, made them feel like they were successful, they're rarely talking about the things that you and I are talking about right
mm-hmm.
now. Right?
Yep.
They're looking back and they're thinking about the time they spent with family, about the relationships they had, about the opportunities they had for new experiences, right? Very few people are sitting there talking to me like, well, yep, I got that degree and I got that job and I got that pilot and I passed that test, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how people mark success at the end of their life.
Right.
But for you and I, who are, I would say, in the thick of our life,
mm-hmm.
not middle. I'd
right.
like to think that
no,
we're still
not, we're not middle age.
We're on the early side of middle, right? I like to think that I'm going to make it past 76.
Oh, we're doing math.
Not well. Let's think 76. Yeah, I'd like to think that I'd make it past that.
76 for you, maybe.
Yeah, it would be. Early side of middle. I turned 38 this summer. Don't look at me like I can't do math. 38 times 2 is 30. Is 76.
You're older than I thought you were.
Rude.
It would be rude if I thought you were way older than you actually are.
What? All right. Back up. How old did you think I was?
I thought you were
35. Okay. Did I just? That's because I have like the maturity of a 35-year-old? I'm not sure what this says.
You do not have the maturity of a 35-year-old.
Don't have the maturity of a 38-year-old
right.
either. So
yeah. I'm even more surprised.
At any rate, you know, people looking back do not define success, I think, in the same way that you and I generationally are defining success right now.
Yep.
And I would think, I don't know this, but I would think that for those people who are looking back now, when they were on the early side of middle of their lives, they were not defining success in that same way either, right? They weren't looking around at 35 and being like, oh, I've got so much time with my family, I'm successful. Like, I don't think,
right.
I don't think it's just like, oh, that generation was better at it. I think there's something about our age demographic, more than generation, our mm-hmm. age demographic, like we're in the midst of it, we're in the thick of it, and we can't
right.
see the success, we can't see it other than what's the next goal that we have to get to.
Yeah. I'm curious, how many, like, what percentage of people who you talk to at the end of their lives are satisfied with how they've done in their life?
You know, that's a great question. I am fortunate enough, I'm not in a role where I'm talking to, like, people from, I shouldn't say fortunate enough, I talk to people who I have a relationship with, right?
Mm, yep.
Like I'm there for people who are members of our congregation who have, you know, been around. And so for the most part, I would say my percentage is probably skewed higher
mm-hmm.
Because I'm talking to people who I've known for a long time and who have been, you know, walking faith for a long time.
Right.
I imagine that percentage would be drastically different if I were a chaplain in a hospital who was talking to people from all sorts of walks of life,
right.
With faith, without faith, all, you know, and I've certainly talked to people who are like, oh, man, this did not go well. Or
yeah.
like this relationship, like I ruined this. I've had that.
Yeah.
But I would say they're further and fewer between just because I have a skewed sample set.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, so as we're talking about success, we're talking about kind of material success.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to get into an article from one of our friends at Relevant.
Oh, our friends.
Our friends. This particular author, whose name is escaping me. There it is. Heather. Sorry, this font is really tiny and
yeah,
this is my 38-year-old eyes.
Heather's a tough one.
It's not. Heather is not the hard part. Kaliri. C-A-L-I-R-I. Heather Kaliri?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
So Heather wrote this and she says, everything I knew about success was wrong. That's how she starts this.
Everything.
That's what she says.
Yeah.
But she's talking about success within the realm of spirituality. And
okay.
what I think is really interesting is that what you described, right, there's that pull to the next thing
mm-hmm.
is exactly what she was describing as thing. Like, that's what success in my spiritual life is going to feel like too, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to get to the next marker. I'm going to be able to do the next thing. That's going to be success for my spiritual life. And so she says, in some ways, it was a great goal. My church's mission is to disciple fully devoted followers of Jesus. That was part of what I thought was spiritual success, deep engagement with God and God's will. But it was the other part of successful that got me into trouble. Success implies external markers of achievement. A successful business has healthy profits and excited customers. A successful movie wins Oscars and fills theaters. So what do we think about that to start, right? This idea that success has these external markers of achievement.
I think it's personal, right?
Yeah.
And I think the external markers of achievement can be important insofar as they are important to you.
Mm, sure.
Right? Like, I don't, Yeah. I mean, I think if you're defining success for yourself, there's a lot of different ways that can look. And you might not care about, you know, whatever milestone is the supposed external marker.
Yeah.
You might care a lot about how you feel in the process or goals that you reach that nobody else ever knows about, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the thing for me, right? Mm-hmm. Goals are good.
Right.
We should have goals. Yes. We should strive for things. There's nothing wrong with that. But when the goal becomes the thing, you're never going to get there, right? Because if you're looking for that goal to fulfill you, complete you, whatever it might be, it's always going to come short. It's always going to leave you empty. And so it's going to leave you seeking another goal and never feeling like you've gotten. And that's what I think she's driving at a little bit here, but I also think is what is problematic when we talk about success more broadly.
Mm-hmm.
So she talks about how college was like the pinnacle of her faith, and she got out of college and struggled with, sad, right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
honey.
She got out of college and started struggling with depression and anxiety and other things like real life stuff.
Yeah.
And suddenly she felt like her faith was no longer successful. Like I had this great moment where I was like leading ministry in college, and that was now the pinnacle of my success in faith. And I'm out of college. I'm doubting my faith. I'm not praying as often. And that's where she's like, well, I'm not successful anymore. Does that make sense how her story is going
here? Can we circle back to what she called her church's mission to build like fully engaged,
fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ?
Yeah. What does that even mean? Like what?
Well, I'm not like their mission.
I know you are not. I'm saying like in
what do
like,
they? Yeah.
Let's ponder this for a minute. Because
fully
I don't
devoted
know that
followers of Jesus Christ. Well, I mean, all right. If I were trying to put a positive spin on this. Which, for the sake of this argument, I will.
Yeah, do it.
I will say that we want people who are neither or who are either cold or hot. We don't want lukewarm, right? And so, if you're going to be in this to follow Jesus,
mm-hmm.
we want you fully in this. So you're invested in following Jesus in every walk of your life. And so, it's not that you're necessarily like every person you talk to, you got to talk about Jesus with, but you are aware of how following Jesus impacts your grocery trip. Your restaurant choice, your meal, or your not meal, your like what you're doing at your home, like your relationships, like every aspect of it, you're just seeing it through the lens of being a follower of Jesus. That's how I would define a fully devoted follower of Jesus Christ.
For better or worse, that's how I would define it. No, I think so. One thing about like a college environment, especially if it's like a faith-based college environment, is it's a set of circumstances that do not exist anywhere else in the world, right?
What?
Like, you will never probably achieve that same level of social interconnectedness and lack of worries, generally speaking, as you do in that college environment. And I think it's really dangerous for people when they're like, oh, you know, this is what it looks like to be spiritually successful, right? In my little Baptist Collegiate Ministries group, you know, that we have Not a Care in the World and meet five nights a week for singing and whatever. I don't know what it looks like, really. I didn't go to these.
That was somehow both dismissive and incredibly accurate. It was really kind of frightening.
I heard a lot about them, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you could hear them singing every time you walked
in my skull. I can hear it still. The bells!
Solid Edgar Allan Poe reference.
Thanks. Yeah, like that's, if you think that that is what the rest of your life has to look like to be spiritually successful, that's bad news.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a piece of what the disciples wrestled with too, right? Mm-hmm. They're following Jesus, and the whole notion that they have, that they think they understand of what following Jesus means, turns out is completely wrong.
Right? And he really switches it up on him when he dies, right?
Right. Yeah. They're like, okay, we're going to follow Jesus. We're going to kick out the Romans. We're going to, start the reign of David. Like, and all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, this guy's getting arrested.
Hold
this
on.
Is not what this is supposed to look like.
Right.
This, and so she quotes Richard Rohr, of whom I'm a big fan. I don't know if you know Richard Rohr. He's a Catholic monk, I believe. I don't remember what faith or what a branch of monastic tradition, but he's has all sorts of writings, and now I'm thinking maybe he's died and maybe it's all like writings that are,
is this the Byzantine monk?
I'm getting out of my realm of knowledge here. Anyway, Richard Rohr, I like his stuff. Richard Rohr says this: the revelation of the death and resurrection of Jesus forever redefines what success and winning mean, and it is not what any of us wanted or expected. Right, so that when we actually start thinking about success through the lens of the death and resurrection, all of a sudden, those goals that we set for ourselves, we start to see, oh, this is not actually what success in following Jesus looks like.
Right.
Because success in following Jesus takes a very different turn. And she's going to lay out some ways in which success in Jesus takes a different turn. So let's just think for a moment. Revelation of death and resurrection of Jesus forever redefines what success and winning mean. How does that strike you? What does it feel like? Good news? Does it feel scary? Like, what do you think about that?
Generally, I feel like it's good news. Like, I tend to feel like spiritual success is kind of besides the point a little bit. Like, yeah. Is there such a thing as spiritual success?
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the way that I tend to approach my spirituality is that it's really not about me.
Yeah.
And so there's very little that I can do to, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Make it awesome or screw it up, you know? Yeah. Like, it's very... Yeah, it's not so much about me. Like, I, as a human, will always fall short of that goalpost, right? And I know that. And that's sort of my understanding of Jesus and where he fits into this narrative, right?
Yeah.
Is that that is the thing that carries us to that goalpost.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think the concept of spiritual success is a little bit of a head scratcher to me in some ways.
Yeah. I think maybe success is the wrong word when it comes to spirit.
Right.
And I think that Richard Rohr might agree with this as well, right? That when we redefine success, we're no longer talking about success as we think we are, right? As you were describing that, I'm thinking about, like, moving towards health, like spiritual health versus unhealth.
Fulfillment maybe would be a way to put
helpful.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Those things come through means that we would not traditionally identify as success.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's what she's going to lay out here. So let's talk about a couple of these.
Okay.
Success implies upward mobility.
Okay.
But Jesus preached, sorry, the line is broken up in weird spots. So Jesus preached in upside down kingdom. Sorry, it's like broken up in the middle of a word. Like, what is happening? All right. Success implies upward mobility, but Jesus preached in upside down kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we were talking about early on, right? Our understanding of success in the world. Oh, I'm going to get that next goal. I'm going to get that next thing. I'm going to get my pilot's license, and then I'm going to get the next license.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to become an associate pastor, and then I'm going to become a lead pastor, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what success talks about. But that Jesus is like, no, flip that all over. You know, the first are last, the least are the greatest. If you want to be greatest among these, you have to be servant of all, right? These are kind of key passages that Jesus will talk about this. So how does that hit us? What do we think?
It's a little bit unsettling, isn't it? Because it, depending on how these passages that Jesus talks about are delivered,
yeah,
it can sound very, well, I need to not be, you know, commercially successful then to be spiritually successful.
Right.
And I don't know that that's what Jesus means here.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think that's what Jesus means either. I think... This is where the important distinction is, like, what is the fulfillment that we're looking for,
mm-hmm.
right? If we are thinking being materially successful will fill me, we're going to come up short,
right?
If we are pursuing a spiritual fulfillment, and in the process of that, we happen to be materially successful, right? We get the next goal, we do the next thing. That's not bad,
right?
I don't think Jesus wants us to stop achieving or stop trying things, but to stop defining ourselves by the achievement, and rather than to define ourselves by who we are through him and through the death and resurrection that he offers. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a writer that I follow on Instagram named Zach Anner. He has cerebral palsy and has turned into, like, kind of an unexpected motivational speaker. He's really funny and has been quietly really good at what he does in terms of screenwriting for years.
Okay.
And it's just
kind of... Anything we know?
Several TV shows. I'm trying to think.
Okay.
Anyway, Golden Globe nominated stuff. Like, done
I'll
very well
it,
as
I'll
a screenwriter.
He wrote Big Bang Theory. That's
sure.
Fine.
Yeah. That's go fine. For it. Yeah. Zach Anner of Big Bang Theory. It's probably totally wrong. But he's kind of gained internet popularity recently for his just kind of funny, quirky, motivational speeches that he does. I love to follow him. But I was thinking today that is, like, a way that I would define success that is unconventional, because, you know, if you look at him from a more conventional lens, right, he uses a wheelchair, he is disabled, He is not a name that has been like known. He's not a big name in writing. He's just been good at what he does behind the scenes. But I think that that is an example of somebody who has really thrived in their circumstances, right? Like he is really seems to have like made the most of his particular circumstances.
It seems like he's found an identity within the circumstance that allows him to feel or to express himself in a way that feels fulfilled.
Yeah. And it's really great to like witness too. Yeah. Like it's such like an uplifting thing to watch and read too. So that's like kind of just a thing I was pondering on the way in today of like, that's, I would say that he's actually like quite successful in maybe non-traditional ways.
Right. But the world might not look at him and say, oh, that's a man of success, right? Because he doesn't have the big house and the car and the whatever.
Right.
I think that's really helpful. And I think that gets to this next point a little bit. So we're going to move right here. Success assumes our efforts matter. Instead, Christ is made perfect in our weakness.
Your efforts do not matter.
Well, I mean, success is like this meritocracy, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I work hard and I work harder than everybody else, then I'm going to get rewarded and I'm going to be successful because I worked the hardest. And that's not how Jesus works. And it's not what Jesus necessarily encourages for us.
Right. It's again, also not how the world works, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. But that's definitely what we're taught. You know, whether or not it's actually how it plays out, it's definitely what we're taught. I think we come to that point where we all like realize like, oh, wow, this is not working, right? And it doesn't matter how hard I push. This is not making a difference. Mm-hmm. Our author here will share this story. In college, I assumed my religious achievements were how I pleased God. Yet one night post-college, wondering if I could even stay Christian, I felt God telling me that he loved me no matter what. Like, what does that change for us to say like, oh, I don't have to hit the home run for my parent to love me, right?
Yeah.
I can strike out and not get a hit and make an error, and my dad's still going to tell me that he loves me at the end of the game, right? We don't all have that experience. Some of us don't have that experience until we're in our 50s or 60s or you know. It's a very different way of defining ourselves that what I'm doing matters, right? And the work that I'm putting in matters, but it's not what defines me or makes me worthy of love and appreciation from God.
Yeah. I think that sort of shift in perception leaves space for contentment, right? Because then you can say, okay, well, kind of regardless of what exactly the outcome is here, like I can find ways to feel good enough about what happens and to be happy and feel like it is enough, whatever it is.
Yeah. All right. Success implies we'll look successful. But Jesus was despised and rejected.
I mean, also the figurehead of a major world religion, but...
Well, now, posthumously, maybe we'll be, I don't know. I think, you know, when I think about the spiritual realm of this, you know, when you think about, like, who you see as spiritually successful or who stereotypically you see as spiritually successful, they're, like, super pray all the time, right? Like, they have amazing...
Who would you think, like... Can you think of anybody who you're like, I think they're super spiritually successful? I'm not sure I can.
That's a really weird question. I hear what you're saying. I can picture a person. I don't know that I can name someone, but I can like picture the stereotype, right? The stereotype is like that person who's just in tune with the spirit, prays all the time, prays really beautifully, doesn't make it about themselves, or at least not intentionally so, knows their Bible, right, can speak into people's, you know, sadness and grief and bring comfort in the like. I can think of the type of people who I would say like, yeah, they're just in tune with stuff. But then this also reminds me, right? The success implies we'll look successful, that we don't have to look like any of that.
Right.
That it's not that I don't think that Jesus was despised and rejected means that like we should go out and be despised in order to be spiritually fulfilled. I don't think that's
the
point.
I'm doing great.
Nailing it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the point. But I do think there's some element to, hey, if we're following Jesus, it's not going to be super attractive to everybody. And that's okay.
Yeah. Like I would say in the way that like somebody who is super Wall Street successful.
Sure.
Like does attract people, right? Yeah. Like the people like, oh, you know, there's success and I want to be a part of that. Whereas like, again, success is a weird term for this for me, but like the success that might come from your spirituality and your relationship with God, that's quieter, right?
Yeah.
Like I was just thinking, you know, probably people that are spiritually successful, we can't name them because we have no idea who they are because the show of spiritual success is totally besides the point, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's great. All right, success threatens failure, but Jesus promised an easy yoke. And I'll be honest, this is probably the one I like the least.
Okay. Success threatens failure.
Yeah.
Meaning to be successful, you might fail. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
You might fail at anything. You might fail at waking up tomorrow morning. Like,
I don't think that's failure. That's
well, it's failure or something.
Yeah, I think that's like, I think for me, this is a little bit of like, oh, well, I'm just afraid to do anything. Like if I pursue success, I could fail, and I'm afraid to do that, so I'm not going to do anything. And I don't quite understand how she's trying to connect that to Jesus promising an easy yoke. Like I get it, but you can fail at things following Jesus too.
Yeah, I have a picture in my bedroom.
Okay,
this huge picture that says anything will kill you, so choose something fun.
Oh, okay,
and that's like sort of my. If I have a motto, yeah, that's it. Right?
This is my mantra as I breathe. Right. Anything will kill me, so choose something fun.
Right, like you can break your neck falling in the bathtub. Like,
good, don't do that.
Yeah,
but like, shower anyway.
Shower anyway. Do the things that are important to you. Go after the things that are interesting to you. Kind of regardless, like even if they're a little bit scary. If they're a little bit scary, you should definitely do them. They're way more important if they're a little bit scary.
Hmm. Some things are appropriately scary.
Some things, I mean, you don't need to be an idiot about stuff. Just saying. Take appropriate precautions, but do the scary stuff.
Petting a grizzly bear seems really interesting.
Yeah. The National Park Service Instagram account has some great advice about this.
They do. I've seen some of that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I think we should put our trust in Jesus. I think Jesus' yoke is easy. I think the easy yoke coming from Jesus, if I'm understanding to my best ability what Jesus is trying to tell us, right, is not that means you have a life free of failure or a life of ease. It means that you are comforted in knowing whose you actually are and where your identity actually comes from, that you're not defined by failure or success. You're defined by this other thing that Jesus is trying to offer us. All right, so the resting place beyond success. This is where we get to her kind of ending point. And interestingly, I think comes very close to what we are describing as a Lutheran church. 2 years ago, visiting an Episcopalian church, so close to Lutheran.
That's so close.
I participated in communion. I had spent years feeling anxious about the Lord's Supper, but in their service, the priest placed the wafer on my tongue, a weird practice that I...
They stick their fingers in your mouth?
Well, no, they put the wafer... They just put... it doesn't matter. Without me moving a muscle. Her whole point, right, is that without having to do anything, she was able to receive the fullness of the presence of Christ, right?
Yeah.
And it is a Catholic slash more, much more high liturgy practice that the wafer, the body of Christ, is so sacred that only the priest can touch it. And so they put it directly on your tongue. In fact, there are these things that basically look like really fancy Pez dispensers.
No.
Yes. And you can like... pop them out. All right, so they're like straight.
What do they use for the wine? A squirt gun?
I don't know how the wine works. I don't understand all of it. But that is a thing. And I've had people who have come to Lutheran churches not knowing that we're not Catholic, that we don't do that.
Yeah.
And just like come up and have their mouth open. I'm like, yeah, you can just hold out your hand.
Funny aside here. My parents went to an Anglican church in France.
That's basically Episcopalian.
Very similar. Yeah. And they have the communal like wine cup.
Yeah. We used to have that here.
And there's a thing about it in the Anglican church that like that. Like the communion wine is like so sacred that it cannot be left out or saved
after communion. It's the blood of Christ. Yeah, you gotta finish it.
They had a light week one week where like nobody showed up because everybody was out sick, and he had to drink like this. He threw back this huge goblet of wine. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I've been to a couple places where it seems like the priest enjoys that part a little too much.
Probably,
but that's a different issue.
Really in the college days.
Really into Moke and David. At any rate, so for her, this experience of like receiving the fullness of Christ, of the presence of God in communion, right, brings her back to realizing that success is not the thing that we should be seeking at all.
Mm.
That what we're actually seeking in spirituality is this connection and this relationship with Jesus. And I think that's where the Lutheran liturgy, the Lutheran tradition, when it comes to worship, actually doesn't point us towards success. right? And I think if we take it, not just for what it's worth, if we take it seriously and really enter into it, it really points us away from a lot of those success markers mm-hmm. of the world and towards this relationship with God in yeah. a meaningful way. Particularly when we're talking about sacraments, right? When we're talking about baptism and communion, for us as a Lutheran church, we're saying like these are explicitly two things where you do nothing and God's grace is poured out upon you, right? Yeah. One of the reasons we baptize infants is because it's a beautiful reminder that God's grace is true for all of us, even though we can't choose it,
right?
Even though the infant does nothing to earn God's grace is poured out infinitely upon that yep. child. In the same way it is poured out upon an adult. This is not to dismiss adult baptisms, but as an adult, we start to think, oh, but I made the right choice. The choice is not what matters, right? It's always about what God is doing. Coming to the table for communion, it is always about what God is doing. The pastor, the priest can be a complete jerk, and it can turn out later that they were an idiot who didn't believe anything that they were saying. And yet, in all of those places, God showed up and was present and fully present for those who participated in it. Regardless of what the Catholic Church says about that one priest who forgot a word.
Oh, he got the words wrong and all of his baptisms don't count.
That's a tough break. But it's not how it works. Or at least it's not how we in the Lutheran Church think it works, right? We think that it's entirely God's presence. And that for me is what this whole success conversation mm-hmm. comes back to, is that when we're defining ourselves by what God is doing in our lives, we're leaning in towards spiritual health. Yep. And when we're trying to define ourselves by what we are doing in God's life, we're trying to lean into a material success mm-hmm. that's always going to leave us feeling empty.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like a good place to end it.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe you had another thing.
No, you're like good? It. I think that's the spot.
All right. Well, then, if you're feeling successful today, or
successful.
Not.
Successful.
Yeah. So whatever, however you define success.
Clearly, I'm feeling successful today.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, no longer pre-successful.
I think I will always be pre-successful.
There you go. That's something. We're always striving for something, and striving is good. Mm-hmm. But hey, send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. You can find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com, and we'll be back with you next week, I think. Maybe.
Yeah. Should be.
At some point, Patrick and I are gone for a while. I don't know when that's happening, but
we're
here next week.
That's not next week.
That's not next week. No. Yeah, okay. Whew, we got time.
Yeah.
All right, have a great week.